It is Garden Talk. It is live, as always, at KSRO in beautiful Santa Rosa, California. Long-range forecast, a little bit of drizzle today and tomorrow, cloudy and overcast Sunday, and then a little bit of rain next week also, and then supposedly sun coming midweek or so, and lots of sun. Gwen's happy about that, so you can get in and, is that right, get into your garden and not stomp everything down and sink into the mud?
Well, you have to wait for that sun to help dry out the soil a bit.
Before we meet our special guest, Ronnie has a question or comment about hydrangea calling from Santa Rosa. Hi, Ronnie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. Yeah, I've got two hydrangeas in pots that I think they're outgrowing. They're leafing out and budding out and all that, but I'd like to just transplant them into the ground. Do you think that's too much of a shock this time of year? You know, wait till it dries out a little bit.
Yeah, wait till the soil dries out so it's a little more workable, and then I would go ahead and get them in the ground. You can do it, you know, as soon as the soil's workable. Yeah. Just go ahead, pop them out of the pot. Make sure that the roots aren't girdling. You know, loosen up the soil a little bit. Don't dig a hole any deeper than the depth of that root ball.
Okay.
But you can make the hole a little bit wider so the roots have an easier time of reaching outwards. And give the plant a good drink of water. Put some compost, any organic compost, on top of the soil around the plant so it's like a mulch. And then just watch and wait for it to bloom.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Ronnie. Have fun.
Thanks for your call, Ronnie. And all the way from Winters, California, we want to say hello to Pat Reynolds, and thanks for driving in. How long did it take you to get to Santa Rosa from Winters?
It was a short drive. It was about an hour and a half. No traffic. It was great. Yeah.
May I add that Pat Reynolds is the general manager of Hedgerow Farms in Winters, and we are going to hear all about this phenomenal wholesale nursery, all revolving around native plants.
So what's the specialty of Hedgerow Farms?
Yeah, so at Hedgerow Farms, we grow native grass and wildflower seed of known genetic origin for habitat restoration projects. So the idea here is that we're growing material that we know where it originally came from in the wild. And as a result of that, it's going to be adapted to local conditions. So for folks that are doing habitat restoration projects, they can pick and choose the what we call the ecotypes or the locations where this wildland seed came from to maximize their habitat values.
You only sell within California?
So the majority of the material that we sell is from Central and Northern California. Mm-hmm. You know, we specialize in these ecotypes that come from Central and Northern California. Yeah.
And would the seed you sell for Southern California be different than Humboldt County? A different seed blend?
Absolutely, yeah. So part of the idea of using seed of known genetic origin is you want to use the material that comes from the local area to the extent possible. So something that came originally from Southern California wouldn't be as well adapted as the seed that comes from Northern California. So we have a sister company. It's called SNS Seeds. They actually do a somewhat equivalent seed production in Southern California. So they kind of cover Southern California, and we cover Northern California.
That's really a niche type of business. When did you get started? Who started the company?
Yeah, great question. So Hedgerow Farms was started in the 1980s by a guy named John Anderson. John Anderson was a veterinarian at UC Davis, and he developed this fascination for native wildflowers and native grasses. And he essentially went out and figured out how to take seed from the wild, how to grow it out in a farm setting, how to clean it, how to bag it, how to bring it to market. And it's because of what John Anderson did that all of this seed of known genetic origin, this native seed, is available for all of us for use in habitat restoration and habitat enhancement projects.
I would guess with the wildfires this past couple of years in Sonoma County and other places in California, you've been really busy with restoration seeding.
Yeah, so one thing that we're doing right now is for the Carr Fire in Redding. One of the things that we do at Hedgerow Farms is we sell the native grass straw that we produce, and it provides really great material for erosion control. Mm. And so for the Carr Fire, they're using our material. They're seeding native seed of known genetic origin first, and then they're applying our native grass straw on top of that to provide that great erosion control. And the one thing that's really special about native grass straws that often contains some native grass seed with it. Mm-hmm. So it's you get this added benefit of not only having this great material that helps with erosion but erosion control, but it also provides this additional seed. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So is most of the business geared toward restoration control, erosion control?
It's mostly habitat restoration. Habitat restoration, which in some cases includes erosion control as part of that. Yeah.
And do you're a wholesale nursery? Are you can retail home gardeners buy your products?
Yeah, so we're set up primarily for the wholesale market, but homeowners can come and get material from Hedgerow Farms. Mm-hmm. But it's not like we're an open operation where folks can just drop in, so they would need to call us prior to and set up their order. And then from there, as long as they have a $100 minimum, you know, because it's, again, kind of a wholesale operation, mm-hmm. We're happy to provide folks with seed, and we have a native plug nursery as well as native straw if that's what they're interested in.
So you have greenhouses that people can go through with an appointment? How is it set up?
So the majority of the plant material is grown in greenhouses, but it's grown off-site. We do have a holding nursery that's on-site as part of that, and certainly folks can come in and take a look, but generally speaking, what they'll do is they'll set up their order in advance. It's not like you can come and browse our plants and then pick and choose. You kind of have to know what you want. We set that up, and off we go.
And are there color photos of what the plants are going to look like?
Good question. There certainly are color photos on our website, hedgerowfarms.com, of many of the plant species that we do grow out there. So that is the source. And then also on our website, we have a sortable database, and it has all of the species that we offer at Hedgerow Farms. And you can simply take the scientific name, type that into Google, and very quickly you're going to end up with some pictures that show you what these plants look like.
Are they habitat friendly? Are these any pollinators would be interested in any of these?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's one of our target markets. We grow a lot of native wildflowers for precisely to provide habitat for bees and butterflies mm-hmm. and other pollinators. So we do a lot of work with that. We have many, many different species. We're doing a lot of work with milkweed, which is, of course, the host plant for the monarch butterfly. Yeah. And probably a lot of you have heard about the really dire condition that the coastal California population, the Western United States population of monarch butterflies are in right now. And so we're doing a lot of work with milkweed as well as the nectar plants, which is another important part of providing habitat for monarch butterflies.
If retail customers want to purchase, is there a minimum?
$100 minimum. Yeah, that's right.
And when we come back, we'll talk about the big open house coming up on, is it April 26th?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Pat's in the KSRO Greenhouse. Pat Reynolds, General Manager of Hedgerow Farms in Winters, California. What's Winters famous for?
That's a good question. It's fairly close to Lake Berryessa, would be one thing. It's this very charming farming community. It has a really nice downtown area. There's an excellent brewery called the Berryessa Brewing Company.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So that comes to mind first. You see where his head's at. So I have never been to Winters. Have you been to Winters, Greg?
Yes, I've been. Tom Guglia, my sunflower friend, and his wife Katie, and I had the pleasure of going to Hedgerow Farms a couple months back, and we got quite a few plants ourselves, and they're doing amazing.
I'll have to take a trip. Last time I was at Lake Berryessa was 1986. And it was August. It was about 116 degrees, and I was out on a sailboat with a friend of mine. We didn't do too well. It was quite a fascinating afternoon of sailing on Lake Berryessa. But I'll have to check out Winters. We'll be back after this. We'll take a couple of email questions in just a few minutes. You can reach us live, as always. We'll get you right on the air with any questions or comments on anything you hear on Garden Talk. 636-1350. Steve Garner along with Gwen Kilcher and Pat Reynolds, General Manager from Hedgerow Farms in Winters, California, California Native Grasslands Association. You have an open house. Is this once a year that you have an open house?
Yeah, we have this once a year. Yeah, it's a joint event that we do with the California Native Grassland Association. And the idea here with our field day, it's called, is essentially to teach people about using native plant material in habitat restoration, but also it's very applicable to the homeowner as well. Yeah, it's a really good event. It includes things like hay rides and walking tours, and we have a fairly spectacular demonstration garden that we take folks out to, and we have some scientific experiments that we're working on with UC Davis that we also take folks out to and explain as well. So it's quite the event.
So are things in bloom now in the demo garden, or will be in
yeah.
the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, there are many things that are in bloom right now, but it's been kind of a wet and cold year, right? So I think flowering is a little bit behind, I would say. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like right now, in our fields, we have California poppy that's in flower, and it's absolutely spectacular. We have sky lupin, this beautiful lupin. Purple lupin that's just unbelievable. So it's things are really nice, and it's
is only, it this color photo, the spider lupine that's on your?
No, that's a different one. Yeah, this one's Lupinus succulentus is the one I'm talking about, which is a difference. You know, it's more of a It's kind of a succulent lupin, like the name implies. Very tall for a lupin, you know, can be more than 3 feet tall. Beautiful blue, kind of purplish flowers, some white, spectacular. Yeah.
I noticed in your newsletter that Sonoma County has somewhat of an honor. There's a new meadow barley, it says, that ecotype from Sonoma County has the distinction of being the first source-identified seed to receive certification in more than 15 years from the California Crop Improvement Association?
Yeah, that's great, yeah. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, we got some what we call stock seeds, some seed from the wild, from the Laguna Foundation, some folks in Sonoma County. They had actually collected that seed for us, and we've grown that out at Hedgerow Farms. So that seed, this meadow barley seed, again, of known genetic origin, in this case, you know, it's from Sonoma County. It's available for folks to use for their own projects. And it's through what's called the California Crop Improvement Association. We've got this certification, which is it's a program that just started in recent years, and we're the first ones to have gone through that process. And it just so happens this new meadow barley was the first to get what's called yellow tags that certifies the seed.
So you don't sell, and that was a good point Gwen made during the break, you don't really sell shrubs, per se, or trees.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, what we sell is mostly herbaceous vegetation. That is like non-woody vegetation for the most part, you know, seeds and plants of non-woody vegetation, both a combination of annuals and perennials, a lot of native grasses, a lot of wildflowers, some wetland plants, things like that.
So when people are thinking about re-landscaping, especially after fires, this would be an important component to their landscaping master design, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are great opportunities to increase habitat values for homeowners. At this point, there's been a lot of research that shows that native vegetation actually supports a significantly higher amount of insects, both in diversity, that is the number of insects, as well as the number of different species, as well as the actual biomass, the number of insects. And as a result of that, this native vegetation provides really high habitat values for things like nesting birds that use the caterpillars from the moths and the butterflies that lay their eggs on this native vegetation. So,
So people that have some acreage and they don't know what to do with that acreage, and they come, can they make an appointment if they're going to spend several hundred dollars or even more to have someone sit down with them and say, here's what I've got, here's my hillside, here's my elevation, here's how much I want to devote, here's my water source, give you as much information. Can you put together some type of idea or design idea for them using your seeds and material?
That's a great question, Steve. Yeah, one of the things that we do at Hedgerow Farms is we provide free consultation services for folks that come in. We generally do that through email and on the phone, but essentially we ask all of those same questions that you've asked and work with them. We try to figure out what their goals are for their house or their property or their project, and basically give them advice on what's the most appropriate species to use and how to use them based upon their goals.
Wow. This is all new to me.
They do it all.
Hedgerow Farms. And you're having this open house. Talk about that for a bit, a little bit more. Is it free? Is there a charge for it?
Yeah, so there is a charge for it. It's the primary fundraiser for the California Native Grassland Association. Mm-hmm. I think the fee might be $95. Mm-hmm. It's an all-day event. It includes a catered lunch as part of this. Not only do we have walking tours and driving tours with experts in the field, but we also have a really great lunchtime lineup of university professors, primarily that will talk about different aspects of of habitat restoration. And in this case, this year's theme is using seed of known genetic origin, kind of like what we specialize at Hedgerow Farms.
And actually, I'm looking right here, and I should have checked this before asking you the question. It's $75 if you're a California Native Grasslands Association member, and then $90 for non-members, and $45 if you're a student. So,
You
can go online and register, credit card.
So you do that through the California Native Grassland Association. Unfortunately, I think it's just about
sold out.
Yeah.
So if people want to go this morning and take a look and see if there's still space available, it's Friday, April 26th, and it's 8:45 in the morning till 4, or so all day.
Yes.
And about an hour and a half from Santa Rosa, 2 hours maybe?
Yeah, about an hour and a half from Santa Rosa.
And a pleasant drive, too, to Winters, California. We'll be back right after this. It's Garden Talk Live at KSRL. We can take calls, any questions, general gardening questions, or specifically for Pat from Hedgerow Farms about using these native seeds, 636-1350. You can also shoot us an email, steve@ksro.com.
And not only the seeds, though, the plants. I mean, if you don't want to start with seeds, you buy their plants, put them in the ground, and you're good to go.
How big are the starts?
Yeah, so we specialize in very small plants. They're plug size, and so which are, it's about a 1-inch square by 2.5 inches deep, so they're very small. Mm-hmm. We also do a deep tree band. I think that's about a 2-inch square by 5.5 inches deep. But for the most part, we sell these plugs, and so.
What's a deep tree band?
It's just this rectangular shaped pot, kind of a smaller pot, but it's a little bit bigger than the plugs that we sell.
So people can get a little head start if they want to pay a little more money for those type of starts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The big thing with the plugs is that they're very cost effective. You know, some of these things, depending upon the quantities, can be less than 50 cents each. Depending upon the species, like milkweed, which are very difficult to grow, those are a little more than a dollar.
Milkweed's difficult to grow.
Yeah, milkweed is difficult to grow.
It's so popular, but it's not easy to grow.
From seed. But if you're taking those buying those plugs or plant from a nursery, then they're easier to grow, right?
Yeah, and what I was referring to is they're difficult to produce in the nursery. So I have a few stories about milkweed at some point if we want to talk about
sure,
that.
Sure, next hour we'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. Great. We will be right back. It's Garden Talk Live at KSRO. Just enough time to let you know that we're ready for news at the top of the hour, so we'll take a break. We'll come back with Pat from Hedgerow Farms up in Winters and Gwen Kilcher and myself, Steve Garner, and we'll take some more email questions and on-air questions. It's KSRO. It's Santa Rosa. Garden Talk Hour number 2, live at KSRO in beautiful Santa Rosa, California. I'm Steve Garner along with Gwen Kilcher this morning, hosting the show as always. You can reach us at 636-1350 anytime during the next hour to discuss any and all gardening related questions or comments you might have. When, what, why to do anything in your yard or garden. Problem solving, triage, we do it all on the show. Recommendations for best fill in the blank. When should I prune? Fill in the blank. You name it. We've talked about it for the last 32 years. You can also email us, as always, steve@ksro.com. We'll continue our conversations with Pat Reynolds from the Hedgerow Farms up in Winters, California, in just a couple minutes. I want to remind you to put these on your garden calendar for next week. First of all, KJ, Kendall Jackson's Wine Estates and Gardens, are hosting a Spring Garden Symposium. It's next Saturday on their stunning, it's really stunning, 4-acre gardens out in Fulton. And you'll be able to spend the day with the one and only Tucker Taylor, their master gardener, who is just a remarkable young man who has just brought the KJ Gardens to full fruition. What to plant, when to plant. The master gardeners from UC will be there too. It'll be a lot of fun. And it's from 11 o'clock till 2 next Saturday. That's at 5007 Fulton Road in Fulton. It's going to be held outdoors, rain or shine. And the cost is $35 if you're a wine club member, $45 if you're a winery guest. You can get tickets, RSVP at Eventbrite. That's the KJ Wine Estates and Gardens Seminar. And also, we just got this late last night from the one and only Veronica Bowers, the director of Native Songbird Care and Conservation out in Sebastopol. We had her on last year, and boy, did we get a lot of calls for Veronica about attracting native songbirds to your yard and garden. They're going to be doing an event next Saturday And it's funny because no one's really covered this yet, and we want to tell you about it now because it's strictly limited because of the space available. 10 till 12 next week, the visitors' days at Native Songbird, and you need to reserve in advance because spaces are limited. Reservations are required. Although it is free, it's out on Elphick Road in Sebastopol. The talks are approximately 45 minutes, leaving plenty of time to ask questions and then stroll the gardens and learn more about their work. So here's how to do it. Go to info@nativesongbirdcare.org. info@nativesongbirdcare.org. It's from 10 to noon next Saturday. Songbirds, biodiversity, and native plants. It's wonderful. You went out to the Native Songbird last year, and you said it was just
fantastic.
Terrific. So that's the best way to do it. There is a backup number, 707-484-6502, but admission is free, as I mentioned, but donations, of course, are sincerely appreciated to continue the great work that Veronica Bowers is doing at Native Songbird Care and Conservation. So put that on your calendar, too. You have two great events to choose from next Saturday here in Sonoma County, the KJ or the Native Songbird event out in Sebastopol. Okay?
I'd like to go again this year.
Wouldn't it be fun?
Yeah.
So getting back, we can take some calls at 636-1350. Sally Ladd sent us a couple emails, one with a question and then with some photos, Gwen. Hi, Steve and Gwen. Since it's I didn't get to it confession time, I've got this old climbing rose to fret about at my front gate every morning. What to do, what to do. Thanks for your help and support. And she sent us a couple of photos of this climbing rose, and that's a pretty big monster.
Mm-hmm. I wonder which one that is.
Big thorns and kind of propped up. Could be Sally Holmes. Mm-hmm. Hard to tell by the photos. I mean, but it's good size. So should she hack away at it? Can she damage it if she's not careful? What do you think?
I feel for her because, you know, like a lot of the our listeners that call in usually have the same issues they do, and people that email, yeah, I can relate to all these things because, you know, you'd think that I'd be on top of my garden and have everything looking pristine and perfect, but no. I'm just like everybody else. I procrastinate or I don't get to it, you know, whatever. So there's a few of my climbing roses I didn't get to. So one of these days, I'm going to get the ladder out, and I will climb up there, and I will just selectively prune out all the dead canes, maybe some old flower rose hips that need to go, and just do a little bit of selective pruning right now. That's all you can do. Everybody else, all these, you know, plants, especially this climbing rose here, has sent out all the leaves, and it's going to start flowering, hopefully in May sometime. So you don't want to do any major pruning now to this plant. Let it flower and let it do its thing. If you have some canes that are growing in the wrong direction, something's broken or they're twisted, or for whatever reason that you have to prune a cane off or a cane back, fine, go ahead and do it. It's not going to hurt the plant any. But don't do all your winter pruning now in spring. So like I said, just cut out the dead stuff that you see, old rose hips that are going to start looking unsightly, and then leave it alone.
And for heaven's sake, be careful.
And then, for heaven's sakes, get on it next year when you're supposed to.
There are some really scary-looking thorns on this climbing rose.
I think
are they more aggressive thorn-wise, the climbing roses, than than hybrids or teas? Or, no?
No. Boy, there's a climbing rose that I have, Zephyrine Drohan. I don't think that has many thorns on it, from what I remember.
So just do a little bit of remedial pruning at this point.
Yeah.
But save your major pruning for next November, December, January.
Mm-hmm.
There is your answer, Sally. If you need further info, shoot us another email. Or you can also call us. We have no one on hold at this moment, 636-1350, for live garden talk at KSRO. It's the 12th annual CNGA, California Native Grasslands Association Day at Hedgerow Farms. We're talking to Pat Reynolds, the general manager. That's up in Winters, right near Lake Berryessa, and it's from 8:45 to 4 p.m. on April 26th. Registration is almost filled. If you want to take a look at their website, do so. If you want to head out to Winters for the open house, you can do so. And the what's the website? What's the best website to look at?
So to sign up for the event would be to go to the California Native Grassland Association website.
Okay.
That might be CNGA.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
.org, I think it is.
Yeah.
Probably
yes,
something like that. So we were wondering how people purchase these. You mentioned you can certainly purchase in bulk seed, which is the most economical way if you want to wait till this late fall and winter to broadcast seed. But if you want to do something now, then your choices are really the plugs. Would that be right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this time of year, we're getting late and it's getting past the optimal window for seeding. So it's time to start thinking about plants as opposed to seed, I think, to get your best establishment.
So if people wanted to do a small area, then plugs wouldn't be out of the question economically wise. Let's say you got a 10-foot area that you want to put in, and you can mix those plugs. Correct? You can buy 10 or one, 10 or the other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you could maybe do a mix of native grasses and native flowering plants. Might be nice to create high habitat values. You know, it's always a good idea to have lots of different flowering plants, and the grasses provide a foundation for the flowering plants to grow around. So, it's a great time to put plugs in the ground. Yeah.
What I suggest is for you to go out with a few friends. So you're all doing your landscaping together, because the plugs are relatively inexpensive compared to us buying a 4-inch pot or a 1 gallon at our nurseries here. So a little goes a long way. So you might be looking at having to buy 50 to 75 plants, which could be too many for your yard. But if you go in with your other friends and you each, come together with this one order, then everybody gets the plants that they want. You can either pot them up in 4-inch pots if you don't have time to plant them right now, or just go ahead and buy them, plant them, and from those little plugs. They're just very small sized plants is what they are, with a great root system, and then they have a faster time to get established in the ground. Next thing you know, here's your landscaping done.
And when you plant these, do you want to improve the soil? Will these take to pretty much any type of soil?
Well, that's a good question. These are native plants, right? So you might not necessarily need to enhance the soil as much as you might, say, for a vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I think all plants basically will benefit from additional organic matter, things like that. Having a sort of a healthy soil is always a good idea. So I wouldn't be shy about adding compost, for example, into these sites to give you better soils, but for the most part, perhaps not as much as you would with a vegetable garden.
Will you have sunflower plugs for sale at this event?
Let's see. We don't. So I should clarify. So one thing is that we're not a retail operation. So if folks do want to come out and buy some material, they should call or email first.
What about at the open house?
Open house, no, we won't be selling any material. Nice. Yeah, it's a very busy time. There's more than 150 people that will be there. people walking around all over the place, asking questions, learning about native plants, those kinds of things. So we kind of shut down the operation for the day of the open house. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Tell everybody why we should be planting native plants.
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so native plants provide very high habitat values. And so it's a good idea to provide native plants because, for example, they provide habitat for beneficial insects. So things like bees and butterflies and lady beetles, insects that essentially help out your garden, help out the environment, help to provide pollination services, if you will. So really, it's a great opportunity now to at your house to enhance habitat values. One thing I should mention is I have a neighborhood habitat project going where I've gotten 20 of my neighbors to essentially plant native habitats within their areas. I live in Davis, California. And we ended up having a class from UC Davis studied our neighborhood project last spring. And one of the things they did in that class is they looked at standard landscaping and our habitat plots that we had planted, and they found that there was significantly more beneficial insects present within the areas that were planted versus the traditional landscaping. So there really are higher habitat values associated with using native plants.
Well, if you have native bugs, insects, then you have, native plants. They just go hand in hand. Instead of these hybrid variety plants that these nurseries are developing, you bring them in, these insects have no idea what they are. So why bother staying?
That's absolutely correct. So you bring up a good point, Gwen. There's been a lot of scientific research about this. There is a professor at the University of Delaware. His name is Doug Tallamy, and he's written this book called Bringing Nature Home. And it's a really excellent scientific book that describes many different publications or scientific studies that he's done. And essentially what he's found is that native vegetation supports, like I was saying earlier, a significantly higher amount of insects, native insects that then provide habitat for things like breeding birds. So there is good scientific evidence behind the fact that these native plants provide native insects, and that helps the environment in general.
And a lot of these, go ahead, Steve.
No, go ahead.
A lot of these plants don't require a lot of watering, not a lot of care to them. They're pretty easy to grow plants, and you know, less maintenance and less things that we have to do to these plants.
Yeah, that's correct. But one thing is important when you're trying to establish natives is you have to have really good weed control at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So they're very competitive once established, but if you don't establish them, especially the native herbaceous vegetation that we sell at Hedgerow Farms, it's really important that you get really good weed control before you plant them, because in the absence of good weed control, they're not that competitive. So they need
that. So you've got to be on it.
So yeah. When I was visiting your nursery, I bought about 100 of the Helianthus californica, which is the California sunflower. Yeah. And so I have a whole row of those 100 little starts to get in the ground. So I have to keep that area weed free, huh?
Yeah. Well, that one in particular, though, it's a perennial and it's pretty aggressive. So that would be, but I would say yes, but maybe not as much as some other species.
So I should stay on top of the weeds.
You should stay on top of the weeds, absolutely.
Do you sell more than one variety of sunflower?
We do, yeah. I think we sell 3 different species of sunflower, one in particular has really high habitat values, Helianthus blanderi, the blandered sunflower. There's been some scientific research by UC Davis looking at different species of wildflowers, and they found that one in particular is a really, really good one. And I have it in my yard in Davis, and boy, in mid to late summer, it's just full of native bees. It's really spectacular.
Well, Davis is sunflower country. Mm-hmm. Get all that nice heat. Sunflowers must love it.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Pat Reynolds, General Manager from Hedgerow Farms in Winters, talking about Hedgerow Farms Open House, the 12th annual on April 26th. If you want to sign up, you'll need to probably do so now because it's almost sold out. You can go to cnga.org, that's California Native Grasslands Association, for registration information. If you have questions about seeding and native plants, Hedgerow Farms can answer your questions. 636-1350, or any general gardening questions, give us a call. Gwen's here, 636-1350, or shoot us an email, steve@ksrdo.com. And of course, as always, you can attach a photo or two if you'd like a little more in-depth diagnostics. It is Garden Talk. It is live. It is KSRO. It's Steve Garner along with Gwen Kilcher and special guest Pat Reynolds from Hedgerow Farms in Willits, California. You've mentioned monarch butterflies and, of course, the milkweed several times during the first hour conversation. This is something near and dear to your heart. And you're going to be, you mentioned during the break, doing a presentation about milkweed.
Yeah, that's right. Next week is the Society for Ecological Restoration California Chapter's annual conference. And this year it's in Santa Barbara, California. And I'm going to be giving a presentation on the lessons learned that we've had at Hedgerow Farms from growing out this milkweed, also some trials that we've done, sort of trying to replicate kind of homeowner and wildland settings, and some trials that another organization, the Xerces Society, in combination with the NRCS Plant Material Center, some collaborative trials that they've done, and I'm going to basically take the information that we've learned from that and give a presentation and try to give people some good advice on how to establish milkweed.
So are there some milkweeds that are preferable to grow? Because people say, I'm going to grow milkweed. You go and you say, there's 8 or 10 different ones. I'll just buy a whole bunch of them and mix them up together. No? Good idea? Bad idea?
Yeah, no, that's not necessarily a good idea. Although monarchs will use any species of milkweed to breed. You don't want to use the tropical milkweeds, which are commonly available in nurseries, because these tropical milkweeds, they end up being evergreen in our climate. Oh. And as a result of that, a couple things happen. One is that they end up having an impact on the migratory patterns of monarchs, because monarchs are used to these milkweeds dying back in the fall. And so if you have an evergreen plant, they might not necessarily migrate. And also, because they're evergreen, they end up causing disease with the monarch, something called OE. I can't recall the scientific name, but it's a disease that gets passed on to monarch butterflies from these tropical milkweeds because they end up being evergreen. Yeah.
And so would it be labeled tropical milkweed? We want to avoid that?
Yeah. So you want to use native milkweed, milkweed that's native to California. And more specifically, I think there's a couple of species. One is called narrowleaf milkweed. That one is probably the most widely distributed one in California. That one in particular is probably a very safe bet. Another one is showy milkweed. That's another widely distributed milkweed in California. That's another good one. Another one is the woolly pod milkweed. And those are all, those three species are what we happen to also sell at Hedgerow Farms.
Do they look different?
They sure do. Yeah. They're all very different, surprisingly. And they have different, like, for example, the showy milkweed, it has these large gray leaves, has a very different growth form. As a matter of fact, they have a very different root system as well. We've been doing some trials at Hedgerow Farms trying to determine if we can use vegetative propagation or rhizomes to establish milkweed. And essentially, we found that we could do that with the showy milkweed because of the rhizomatous root system, but not with the narrowleaf milkweed. Very different. So that was one of the things that we learned.
But are they all fairly easy to grow for homeowners, or is there one that's more challenging?
Yeah, that's a good question. The narrowleaf milkweed and the showy milkweed are probably the easiest to grow. But that being said, milkweed are kind of tough to establish. You really do have to give them special care. We talked earlier about the importance of weed control. Mm-hmm. That's really important. They also end up they harbor a lot of insects as well, like the oleander aphid, and that can be a bit of a problem with that. So you're spending some time washing those off your milkweeds to try to give them a competitive advantage. So,
Are they fairly disease resistant once they're established?
They're very hardy once they're established. Yeah, they are for sure. But they certainly do harbor some diseases as well. So, it's a good idea when you're establishing milkweed to not necessarily plant them really dense next to each other. You know, a little bit of space between the milkweed will help with that, help minimize spreading of disease. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Full sun and little water?
Yeah, great question. Most of these milkweed species do best in full sun. In the natural settings, they often occur in wetter areas. So they'll often occur in areas like drainages, things like that. So you'll want to give them some irrigation during the first year, certainly, maybe the second year, that kind of a thing. And then after that, they should be pretty well established.
And pruning, they take pretty well to pruning?
Well, they actually die back completely in the wintertime, right? So even though these are perennial plants, they die back completely in the wintertime. Certainly you can prune back the dead material in the fall, but it's a great idea to hold on to that as long as possible because after a couple of years, they're going to produce some seed, and you can use that seed. You can collect that and try to,
Smart. We'll take a break at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back with Pat Reynolds from Hedgerow Farms. If you have any gardening questions, Gwen's here too, 636-1350. And you've been hearing about Pat's specialty at Hedgerow Farms as far as the California Native Grasslands Association and all the different plants, plugs, seeds that they offer. And if you want to go to the website, California Native Grasslands Association, cnga.org, and find out if there is space available for the Friday, April 26th, open house up in Winters at Hedgerow Farms. Do so, because it's almost sold out at this point. Pat Reynolds from Hedgerow Farms is joining Steve and Gwen today in the KS Arnold Greenhouse, Hedgerow up in Winters, California. And we learned that Pat is an incredible resource, encyclopedic knowledge of milkweed, during our previous few minutes with him. Certainly any and all gardening questions this morning. That's why the show exists, is for you to contribute and interact with our guests, 636-1350 or Steve at KSRO. Hi, Steve. Hi, Gwen. Thanks for the information you gave on black aphids last week. This is from Kathy in Petaluma. Now two of my fava bean plants have these brown spots on the leaves. What do you think those might be, Gwen?
Well, with all this rain that we've had, it could be, and the warmer weather, it could be just a little fungal leaf spot that's developing.
And here's the photo, which has got a lot of brown spots on these leaves. Boy, it is a lot of brown.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, a lot of brown on the leaves. Can you see that photo, Gwen?
It's coming up here.
Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's too bad. I wonder if these plants are growing in sun all day long. If they're in full sun or if they're getting some shade, even a half a day shade is not the best for them because they love the sun. They love the heat. I don't know. If you have aphids on them, kind of looks like towards the top of the plant and underneath the leaves, they have those aphids. There are black aphids that love fava beans for some reason.
Oh.
I'm thinking this is contributing to because of the rain that we've had. It could be that her soil, if they're in the ground, if it's a clay kind of soil, is holding too much water for too long. So then they're having some root issues, compromising them, and then picking up some disease of some sort. I can't believe that she would have fertilized or sprayed anything on them. But if you did spray something for the aphids, I mean, maybe that browning on the leaves is some kind of insecticide damage. But if you didn't spray, you didn't do anything, and the plants are getting more shade than sun, even, in this past 2 weeks, the plants have been getting more shade than sun. But I've not seen this for quite some time. And in the back of my head, it's somewhere, it's telling me that this is because the soil's waterlogged and the plants are basically not happy, teetering on root rot. Time will tell, Kathy. I mean, we're getting out of the rainy season now, hopefully. Maybe the plants will hang in there until the soil starts to dry out, develop new roots, and then continue to grow. But watch out for aphids, which I think that's what those are from this photo. And get some soapy water and spray it on underneath the leaves and down the stems and the whole thing. Do it in the evening, and then the next morning get a strong spray from your hose and wash off all the soapy water, and then watch the plants again for more aphids. Spray again if and when necessary, and just keep on top of the aphids. But if you see any beneficial insects, I'm sure Pat's going to be like, hey, wait a minute. The ladybugs, like I had said last time, if you see ladybugs out there, give them the chance, the opportunity to eat up all those aphids, and they'll take care of them for
you. Your first source of defense.
Yes.
Kathy from Petaluma, if you need further information, shoot us another email or give us a call. Jane from Santa Rosa, looks like she has a milkweed on her mind. Hi, Jane. Welcome to Garden Talk. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I used to have two milkweed plants that someone gave me. I don't have them anymore. But they had bugs on them, and a lot. And I didn't know what they were, but one plant had... I mean, they were sort of aphid size and shape. One was black. One plant had black ones all over it. The other ones had bright yellow ones all over it, which I've never seen before. Can you tell me what those were, maybe? Do you have any idea?
Sure, yeah. So the bright yellow ones, those are oleander aphids, and they're very common on milkweed. And that's one of the things that we hear a lot from homeowners is, essentially, they're not it's not a very pleasant plant to deal with. So those are oleander aphids, but I think the same techniques that Gwen just mentioned in terms of removing those from your milkweed would be applicable. Using the soapy water the day before and then washing them off the following morning is probably the way to go. In terms of the black insect that you're referring to, I'm not sure that there are many, many different species associated with aphids. I mean, with milkweeds. So it could be any one of many different species. Yeah.
Okay. Well, they looked like the other ones, except they were black. So maybe they were black aphids, possibly.
Could be.
Or something else.
Yeah.
Just use the soapy water. Get a 1-quart squirt bottle. Fill it up with water and put in about 10 drops or so of any eco-friendly dish detergent, liquid dish detergent. Shake it up and then go out in the evening and spray the plants everywhere as long as you don't see any beneficial bugs feasting on the aphids. And then I like to go out the next morning and just wash all that soapy water off just in case we get a nice, hot, sunny day it won't cause any damage to the plants, especially the flowers or anything. And then if you see more bugs, spray again, same thing, and just keep on top of it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. Talk a little bit more, Pat, if you would, about how you enlisted your neighbors in this this neighborhood habitat project.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I live in a neighborhood in South Davis called Willow Bank, and we've developed this project there. It's called the Willow Bank Habitat Improvement Program, or affectionately known as WIP. Yeah, and with that, I've gotten about 20 of my neighbors together to plant pollinator habitat plots and valley oaks, the native oak that occurs within the region. And the idea we're trying to establish here is basically getting the neighbors together to both improve habitat values but also social cohesion. We found that basically getting folks together for a common goal really helps to bring people together. We're finding after having implemented this project, our annual Homeowners Association meeting has got a lot more people in there. Our annual barbecue has got a lot more people in there. It's a great thing to do is to work together on a common goal, both improving the environment but also the social cohesion. So, and I think I mentioned earlier that a professor at UC Davis heard about the project we had and essentially ended up making that a class at UC Davis. And get ready for this name. Social ecological connectivity in an urban context. So, yeah, kind of a mouthful, but it kind of gets at this idea of the social aspects as well as the environmental aspects of getting together your neighbors for a common goal of improving habitat values. And it's something that I'm hoping will eventually go beyond our Willow Bank neighborhood. I'm corresponding with some folks from the California Native Plant Society that heard about the project.
I would love to see a template about how you approach neighbors with this concept. Going knocking on doors like, hi, would you like to... That's not going to work.
Yeah.
Some type of printed introduction, presentation, suggestion like, hey, maybe as a neighborhood, we might be interested in doing this.
Yeah.
Where do you start? Because I know there's people out there going, gosh, I would love to be involved in something like that, but I don't have a clue where to start.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so, for our project, it actually started about 15 years ago when the Chinese hackberry trees in our neighborhood were starting to fail. They had been planted in the late 1940s, and they only live about 50 years or so, and these trees were 60-plus years old, and so essentially these trees were dying. And what we did is we got together as a neighborhood, and we planted valley oak trees in between those trees in order to try to establish the oak so that once these trees start to die, those oaks would be ready to replace them. So it started with that. And then with the drought, it got really severe in 2015, and we a lot more trees died, and we kind of reinvigorated the project. We planted more trees. We did maintenance on that. And then in 2016, we added these pollinator habitat plots. And so it's been this evolution through time with that. But I think in terms of setting up a similar project, it works best if there's some kind of existing neighborhood group as part of that. Mm-hmm. And I know today that Nextdoor is a pretty popular program,
sure
I've been thinking about that. That might be a starting place. Obviously, a homeowners association is probably the best, right? And so if you have a kind of a group email or something like that, that's an excellent way to start. You want to end up talking to your neighbors as much as possible, and not necessarily going door to door, but certainly if you start talking to your neighbors, then your neighbors start talking to your neighbors, then you have an excellent opportunity to get a group together as part of this.
Have you published this story anywhere? How you started and what plants you chose and just to be able to read something about how you started this project would be helpful.
Yeah, I sure have. Yeah, so there's a publication called Grasslands. It happens to be the journal for the California Native Grassland Association, and it came out in this winter issue. We basically wrote a publication. I did that with the professor I worked with on the project, Mark LaBelle. He and I wrote that.
Is it Grasslands Magazine?
Grasslands Journal.
Journal,
yeah.
Is it available online, any of their material? Do you have to be a subscriber?
Well, the older editions are available online, so I think that you're not going to be able to get to this last edition, which my publication was in, until after the next edition, which comes out in the spring.
And can then you send us the article?
Absolutely.
We'd love to. And could can we get permission from you to post that on our Garden Talk website?
I'm sure, yeah. Let me just talk to the California Native Grassland Association, and I'm sure it'll be no problem to post that. That would be great.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. I have a few minutes left, about 7 or 8 minutes, if you'd like to talk to Pat Reynolds from Hedgerow Farms in beautiful Winters, California, or any general gardening questions, address us that way. Gwen is here at 636-1350 or Steve at ksro.com. Well, the hour and a half is flying by with Pat Reynolds from Hedgerow Farms in beautiful Winters, California, up near kind of Lake Berryessa area. Steve Garner along with Gwen Kilcher. And if you have a question for Pat about milkweed or any of the type of material, plant materials that he and his staff grow up at Hedgerow Farms, let us hear from you now at 636-1350 or Steve at ksro.com. Gwen, you wanted to add a couple things about the native milkweed as far as what specific variety.
When Pat and I were just talking here, we just want to make sure that people know. Ask your whatever nursery you go to, just ask the nurseryman or even read the label, is this a true native milkweed? If it's not, if it's one of these tropical milkweeds that we shouldn't be growing, walk away. And you know, we do have a few native nurseries here, and you know, independent nurseries that sell California natives, so just make sure you know what you're buying.
Like California Flora. Mm-hmm. And Amarissa.
A Better Way, a nursery that opened on Stony Point Road. It's got a lot of natives.
I'm not sure if they're still open, but out in Tamales, mostly natives. We used to go out there for a bit. Beautiful place out there.
I don't know if he's still around. There's Cottage Gardens in Petaluma. Yeah. Prickett's Nursery. You've got, who else is out there? All the nurseries. Harmony Farm in Sebastopol.
But that would be a safer bet than big box stores.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would. I'm not going to say stay away. You didn't hear that from me. But, yeah. And you know what also goes, if I could say real quick, the neonicotinoid insecticides that some of these large nurseries are putting, you know, growing in with their plants and that are killing the bees. Just make sure that you're buying plants that have not been sprayed and contaminated with this insecticide.
We have a general question. I'm not sure if you want to address this one, Pat, but it says, good morning, all. We have a creekside area with willow and covered with blackberry brambles. Any particular plants that would grow in that area?
Sure, yeah, that's a great question. Well, so the blackberry brambles, they're probably the Himalaya blackberry, which is a non-native species. So if you're considering doing a creek restoration project, that might be one to consider getting rid of and replacing. You can replace that with the native blackberry, Rubus ursinus would be one. But if you're talking about the kinds of things that we sell at Hedgerow Farms, there's a really great native grass. It's creeping wild rye. Elemis triticoides. It does a great job of providing high habitat values. It has a rhizomatous root system. It can be established both with from seed as well as from plants. And we have four different ecotypes of that species available at Hedgerow Farms.
And they would do well in a kind of a boggier creekside environment?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, they're adapted to local conditions. They occur in creeks. They actually are a bit shade tolerant too, which is could be the case, you know, if you're trying to get a native understory developed within the creekside
creeping
area.
Creeping wild rye, eh?
Creeping wild rye. Wild rye. Yeah.
And those would be available in plugs or in seed form?
Correct, yeah. Both plugs and seed form.
So she could get going on that. And that's from Deborah Dow Gallagher, who's not telling us exactly where she is, but along a creekside. So there's an idea. If you want further information, can people email you or directly to Hedgerow?
You sure can, yeah. So just info@hedgerowfarms.com is the email address to use. When you send that out, it goes to several people, and so it gives an opportunity for us to be more responsive. If you tried to email me directly, I might not quite
and could
get
she,
this.
If she wanted to take a photo of this area where she wants to plant and send that along with her question with the dimensions, you'd give her an idea of how much seed she might need for this area?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, at Hedgerow Farms, we provide free consultation services. So I'd be happy to provide her advice on what she might be able to do, and with hopes at the end of the day, she buys our plant material, but we provide that free advice.
And so, like I was saying earlier, if you get a few people together and you call first to make an appointment to go out there, you've looked at their website, you see what plant possibilities that you would like, then Pat and the staff would know, are these the best selections for your area? And so they would help you out, perhaps select other varieties of species of plants that would be better suited. And that way you get to plant once and you don't make any mistakes, and then you start off on the right foot.
Yep. What an amazing resource. I had no idea that we would get into this depth of conversation, and this is remarkable that it's really in our backyard, a couple hours away up at Lake Berryessa, the Hedgerow Farms, which Gwen brought to my attention several months ago. I had not heard of you guys. I don't think you're, at least in the general public, plant-loving public, you're very well known. It's kind of a more of a specialty item as far as the creek restoration and large scale that you do.
Yeah.
I mean, the average gardener is not going, I don't think, know about Hedgerow Farms and what you have to offer.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, well, we generally cater to large habitat restoration projects, groups like the Nature Conservancy who implement large restoration projects. We provide the seed that's used, like the we were just talking about the creeping wild rye. That's an example of some of the seed that the Nature Conservancy uses on a lot of their projects. So we're not necessarily that well known to the public because it's more of a wholesale operation. Mm-hmm. It's a very specific habitat restoration operation, and we provide that seed of known genetic origin. So it's this really special habitat restoration seed and plants that we provide. But again, we're happy to sell material to the public as long as they call us in advance, set up the order, $100 minimum, off we go.
Thanks so much for coming down today to Santa Rosa. It's great having you on the show.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week, Gwen Kilcher. And guess what? Who's going to be here? Robert Couric. Our good buddy, Lazy Ass Gardening, his brand new book.
That's not the name of the book, is it?
Yeah.
No. Where is that book?
We'll be back after this.